Hello, and welcome to Pontifax. I'm Fry.
And I'm Bree, ranking all of the antipopes, from Hippolytus to Felix V. And this is our fourth antipope, Antipope Ursinus.
Like a bear?
Yes, like a bear. Do you remember which one Ursinus is?
No.
This is Damasus' antipope.
Oh, that's so far back.
I know. It's been a long time with the whole traveling through Japan thing and then coming back to it. So he's a little bit further behind than we would normally do an antipope, but it just fit into the schedule so nicely, and we have so many more coming up. So here he is, and I hope you enjoy. So, early life. Because a lot of the antipopes are only ever really referenced in relation to the pope that they stood against, sources in this section are always a bit of a challenge, and we're going to come, it's basically going to be peaks and valleys as we go through the antipopes. Some of them we're going to know a little bit about because they were very dramatic, and some of them we're going to know next to nothing about. So this is one of those situations where we know very, very little about Ursinus's early life. But we do know that by the time of Pope Liberius, he was serving as a deacon in the church, which means he was already a prominent member of the clergy when Liberius was forced into exile by Emperor Constantius II for refusing to condemn Athanasius or sign the Creed of Sirmium, that semi-Arian creed that professed the homoian similar substance descriptor for the relationship between the natures of God the Father and Christ the Son. This also means that he would have been present to witness Archdeacon Damasus follow Liberius into exile as some grand showing of loyalty, only to turn around and come right back, like we talked about in his episode. And it's very likely, based on what happens, that Ursinus did not approve of Damasus's turnaround in the slightest. And this is where we really see what would be the main contrast between these two figures, their motivations, and their approach to the schismatic situation happening in the church. So this is where we can actually look at this in a little bit more detail. It would be fairly hard to ignore the fact that Damasus probably acted out of personal ambition, like we've talked about, when he left and came back. With Constantius II appointing a revenge antipope since Liberius wouldn't play his games, Damasus saw where he could have the most power and influence. And obviously we've already looked at how antipope Felix II had pretty much zero support from the Christian laity of Rome, who they would actively ignore his efforts and petition the emperor constantly to get rid of him and bring back Liberius. But in contrast to that, the Roman elite and the civil authority, they supported the new antipope. And most of the members of the higher clergy, the archdeacons and bishops, generally fell in line with the new antipope, unwilling to compromise their very cushy, comfortable positions and influence. And these are the people that Damasus wants to be in with. When he comes directly back from exile with Liberius, these are the people that he starts to try and ingratiate himself with, you know, the people with power and influence. And likely they're the ones with greater wealth as well, since, as we briefly discussed in his episode, Damasus was accused of living, like, inappropriately opulently for a member of the clergy.
He whispered, he tickled ears.
He tickled ears, and he had all of the wrong friends. But these are the people who are going to vote for him when it became time to elect a new pope. That's what we've pretty much already covered. By comparison, what we know about Ursinus and his supporters were that they represented the other side in this. They are the laity and the lower church orders who had never wavered in their loyalty to Liberius, and who lived a much more modest and humble lifestyle of either, you know, because that was their financial circumstance or because it's what was expected of a church leader in that time. So these are people who are actually, we could argue, a better representation of what the church wanted the church to be, whereas Damasus is getting in with the people who are kind of using the church as a position of ambition and power and wealth. Side note, There is a document that we're going to use a fair bit in this episode, which is called the Quae Gesta Sunt Intura Liberium et Filicum Episcopos, which we are just going to call the Gesta, because I'm not going to say that a million times. And it is thought to actually be dated from directly contemporary to the events that we're discussing. This is a very important document that's going to give us a real-time look at least one opinion on the ground while this whole situation is playing out. So in the Gesta, it refers to Ursinus and his followers as, quote, those who had been obedient to the faith while Liberius was off in exile. And, in the opinion of the author, the rightful successor, whereas Damasus and his supporters are called wicked perjurers. So, right away, the Gesta has an agenda, and we know what side they're on. This source has been looked in quite significant detail by historian Thomas J. McIntyre in his dissertation paper, quote, The First Pontiff, Pope Damasus and the Expansion of Roman Primacy, which was one of the main sources that I looked at for this episode because it is one of the most thorough sources on the internet for information about Antipope Ursinus, and it is available online if you want to do some source checking after this episode. However, I mean, we have to say it up front, this isn't exactly a case of good guy versus bad guy, per se. I mean, we know that Damasus was acting very strongly on personal ambition, and we have our thoughts and opinions about him from the episode we did, but that's probably something that at least played a small part on both sides. And we'll get into why we know this a little bit later, but it's just important that we have to acknowledge this for some sort of, like, fair approach between Ursinus and Damasus, because as we know, things are gonna get so, so ugly. But let's talk about the election and how it actually played out when Pope Liberius died at the end of September 366.
Murder time.
So much murder. Immediately after the death of the pontiff, two separate groups held an election. So Damasus was elected at the Basilica San Lorenzo in Lucina by those higher orders of the clergy, and Ursinus was elected in the Basilica of Senecius, which is also known as the Liberian Basilica. Now, this in particular, having this second election at the Liberian Basilica, may have been a very symbolic choice as a way to tie themselves to Liberius and legitimize Ursinus as the proper successor. And this is an argument made by historian Jacob Latham, although whether this becomes more meaningful in hindsight because of the Ursinians being like fellow exiles with Liberius is kind of hard to tell. Is this something that only looks symbolic after the fact, or did they do this on purpose? So, we don't have exact numbers on the percentage of how each election worked, but in the Life and Times of the Roman Pontiffs, historian Artaud de Montour tells us that Ursinus was elected by, quote, some priests, seven in number, and three deacons. So, if this account is to be believed, then the group that elected Ursinus is very small. Even though we haven't seen a full census in the church population in quite a while, the last time that we got actual numbers of how many clergymen were in Rome, each of these roles were in the hundreds, and this is a total of 10 people having his election.
Yeah, okay, that's like nothing.
Statistically insignificant if it's true, although it doesn't really seem to be true because he's said to have been supported by bishops and such as well, so we really don't know, but this is the only source that actually puts a number on it, and it's a very strange number, so. But he was able to, you know, based on this election and having himself voted for, he had himself consecrated by the Bishop of Tivoli, and his supporters publicly announced his election so that it couldn't be ignored or considered insignificant, especially when the announcement was made before Damasus's election could be announced. They wanted to get the jump on this for sure. Now, we've already covered what happened in Damasus's episode after this moment, but it is so tremendous and scandalous and ridiculous and violent that we're going to go through it again, because it is really a moment for Ursinus as well. So let's go back to murder time.
Murder time.
I love it. Riots begin almost immediately. Right away, the bloodshed is so extreme that two civil prefects of the city, Juventius and Viventius, are called in to quell the violence, which drives Ursinus and his followers out of the center of Rome in some sort of attempt to banish them to Cologne in Gaul. But that didn't stop anything, because the proponents of Ursinus are still clamoring for validation, and Damasus, now having had his election validated out loud, is having none of that. What happens next? Damasus hires a, quote, gang of thugs that storms the basilica where Ursinus and his followers had taken to, which is that Basilica of Senecius, and 137 people were massacred inside.
Yeah, I just, every time you say the number, I'm like, that is so many people.
So many people. And can I point out that that definitely doesn't sound like an election by 10 people if 137 people got killed?
I think someone didn't add a zero somewhere.
Probably. Or like a 4, so it was supposed to be 140, because that would be closer. Again, we have the account from Ammianus from Roman Antiquities, Book 27, Chapter 3. Quote, Damasus and Ursinus, burning with a superhuman desire of seizing the bishopric, engaged in bitter strife because of their opposing interests, and the supporters of both parties went even so far as conflicts ending in bloodshed and death. Since Viventius was able neither to end nor diminish this strife, he was compelled to yield to its great violence and retire to the suburbs. And in this struggle, Damasus was victorious through the efforts of the party which favored him.
So, I don't know, like, I like the idea that, like, someone got too violent and then had to retire to the suburbs.
Yeah, he's just like, no, I'm out of here. Bye. I'm done. I'm gonna go live in the suburbs with my white picket fence and my wife Deborah.
Helen.
Helen works too.
Karen.
Deborah is just as much a suburban mom name. And you know, when your name is Viventius, you need a very solid wife name.
Apologies to my mother-in-law who may listen to this at some point.
Well, there's nothing wrong with the name. You could be a suburban wife and have a fine name. The end of this quote. It is a well-known fact that in the Basilica of Senecius, where the assembly of the Christian sect is held, in a single day, 137 corpses of the slain were found, and that it was only with difficulty that the long-continued frenzy of the people was afterwards quieted. And I have another quote from Dan Graves of Christianity.com. Quote, followers of Ursinus resorted to violence in their effort to oust Damasus. Damasus appealed to Juventius, prefect of Rome, a high-ranking magistrate. The prefect ordered Ursinus out of town. Ursinus left, but his followers did not lay down their arms. Damasus gathered men, armed them, and attacked his rival's forces, who took refuge in the Liberian Basilica. A 3-day battle followed. The supporters of Damasus assaulted the building from the street and also climbed onto the roof, which they tore open, flinging heavy tiles onto the men trapped below. It's not a good account. However, the Gesta offers an even more bloody and extreme account because it says that 3 massacres took place against Ursinus and his supporters. Not just this one.
Three different
massacres.
Okay, so, but is it 3 that equaled 137, or is it 3 different, like, is there more dead bodies somewhere?
There may be more dead bodies somewhere.
Okay.
So Thomas J. McIntyre describes what this source has to tell us. In this account from the Gesta, we have the first massacre ordered and headed by Damasus, which is the one that we just mentioned, having lasted 3 days. This forced the Ursinians out of the basilica, which Damasus then gained control of, and there was a prominent public declaration of his own election as pope and a consecration. Then Damasus bribed the prefects of the city to keep the violence quiet from the emperor and to not issue a report, since he had already petitioned the Emperor Valentinian to recognize him as the legitimately elected successor of Peter. Now, from this point on, we can actually quote the Gesta, because this section has actually been translated into English. Quote, but Damasus, realizing his own wickedness in these affairs, was struck by great fear and bribed the entire palace to make sure his conduct would not be made known to the Emperor. The Emperor, unaware of what Damasus had perpetrated, affirmed the edict so that Ursinus would be again kept in exile, unable to cause disturbances among the populace by some other wicked contentious action. Then Bishop Ursinus, a holy man, having committed no crime, out of regard for the people, gave himself to the hands of wicked men, and on the 16th day before the calends of December, by order of the emperor, hurried into exile of his own accord. So, this is where we see Valentinian stepping in and ordering that Ursinus really needs to be exiled. And when Ursinus gives himself over to be exiled, he goes into exile, but his supporters, in particular 7 presbyters, absolutely refuse to relent and go back to the Liberian Basilica and hole up there. So Damasus, finding out that there are 7 resistance fighters in the basilica, orders that the basilica be stormed again and those men be dragged out.
No, just let them be.
Yeah, so this becomes another massacre. Quote, they broke down the doors and set fire underneath it.
Whoa.
Yeah.
What goddamn Game of Thrones bullshit is that?
Mm-hmm. Then rushed in and ransacked the building. Some members of his household, when they were destroying the roof of the basilica, were killing the faithful congregation with the tiles. Then all of Damasus' supporters rushed and killed 160 of the people inside, both men and women.
Those women did nothing to you.
But this account seems pretty close to the first one, right? Whether or not there's a second attack is unclear. We have 137 people being killed in the first one, and then 160 people being killed in the second one. They're probably the same one, because otherwise we would have heard about another 160 people.
Yeah, I think they would have mentioned it.
But what happened afterwards is new and different. Quote, but those who feared God, though they were harassed by many persecutions, did not fear the emperor, nor judges, nor even that wicked and homicidal leader himself, Damasus. No, they stood firm, conducting services throughout the cemeteries of the martyrs without clergy. And it was at such a gathering, when many of the faithful had come together in the tomb of St. Agnes, that Damasus rushed in with his followers and killed many in a devastating massacre. There could have been another one at the tomb of St. Agnes.
Stop killing people, Damasus.
Yeah. Yeah, not very nice. So it's entirely possible that the violence of this papal schism is even greater than we originally laid out in his episode. We gave him 20 points, though, so we can't, there's no way that he's going to get more for this.
Yeah.
But again, this is only from one short source. It's interesting because it is the most contemporary source. You know, it's the most written on the ground source, so it would have the freshest knowledge, but it's not corroborated anywhere else. The next part we did cover in Damasus's episode, but here is the Gestas account again. Quote, that immeasurably cruel action displeased all of the bishops in Italy. After some of them gathered when invited to the solemn celebration of his accession, he used both entreaties and bribes to try and gain their condemnation against the holy Ursinus. They responded, we are convening for your accession celebration. We are not here to condemn a man in absentia. And so he failed to accomplish the depraved intention for which he had hoped. So that's when he was like, it's my birthday, or in this case, it's my accession day. Why don't you just condemn this man? And they're like, we're here for a birthday. Settle down.
Condemn him. I want this for a present.
Yeah, exactly. And we do know, like, this tells us that at this time, Damasus is using his influence with the civil prefecture and the urban officials to try and have Ursinus's supporters cast out of the city, or at least suppressed in the city with impunity. And if we're to believe Ammianus, one of the prefects Viventius found it so difficult to suppress the rabble that he left the city. So the one that you said can't handle the violence must go to the suburbs. Either he did that then or he did that now, but it is very clear that he just threw his hands up and quit. Meanwhile, Ursinus's supporters relentlessly petitioned the Emperor Valentinian to allow Ursinus and any of his supporters that had been driven out of Rome to be allowed back to Rome, and they also asked him to condemn Damasus as an unjust, corrupt, and villainous man who was a terrible choice to be the next bishop of Rome. And it worked! The emperor was moved by them and passed an order through to the new urban prefect of Rome, a man called Vettius Agorius Praetextatus, that allowed for Ursinus's return. This had been preserved in the Collectio Avellana, and while I couldn't find a copy online of that Collectio, from the dissertation I have Thomas McIntyre quoting it, and indicates that the emperor's letter said, quote, "The gentleness of our own nature and religion itself compels us to take pity on the Ursinians." So he's allowing them to come back. But he doesn't let them come back to Rome. He lets them come back to Milan. And he also adds that there will be, quote, "most severe sentences for anyone on either side who reopen the dispute or disturbs the peace again." However, other documents preserved in this collection indicate that that doesn't mean he was necessarily siding with them, because he also ordered the basilica, that basilica of Senecius, or the Liberian basilica, that the Ursinians had been using as their headquarters. He requires that to be returned to Damasus, who he is in fact officially recognizing as the rightful pope. So, not surprisingly, the return of Ursinus and his followers doesn't really last. When they return to Italy in 368, violence breaking back out was essentially inevitable. And as promised, Valentinian was not prepared to ignore the violence and issued a new banishment that was carried out by Praetextatus and his successor Librius on the grounds that, quote, "Ursinus's allies and ministers were disruptors of the peace and order." So this order, this exile, bans all the Ursinians from any place within 20 miles of the city and sends Ursinus straight to Gaul. He has now been officially exiled for a second time. There are also some brief mentions in McIntyre's account that Damasus continued to send successive attacks against any places that he found the Ursinians occupying, but I couldn't actually find that recorded anywhere but his own writing. So now, we're going to spin off into a bit of some speculative thinking about what happened next before we get into some harder, solid facts. This is a little bit bizarre. So, Ursinius is in exile with his supporters, and Damasus has been recognized as the legitimate pope. So, at this point, this should relatively be a done deal. Unless the Ursinians want to cooperate with another group that had reason to challenge Damasus, and weren't banned from the city so they could actually bring those challenges directly to Rome. Now, way back in Liberius's episode, we introduced three papal legates with a group of wild names. There was Hilary, Pancratius, and Lucifer.
I remember these assholes.
Yes, and they had been exiled for their support of Liberius against Constantius during the Show Council of Milan in 355. We then briefly mentioned that Lucifer, who was the bishop of Cagliari, might have been excommunicated for pulling a novation and refusing to share communion with Miletians and Arians who had rejoined the church. And that had come from Alban Butler. He had been one of those people that had suffered quite thoroughly during his exile, and he was only able to come back during that same edict from Emperor Julian that had allowed Athanasius to return. So he was one of those people that really wasn't willing to give a bunch of heretic schismatics a break. So it seems that if Lucifer was in fact excommunicated for this, that it happened under the papacy of Damasus, and most of the contemporary source that hint or like vaguely touch upon this excommunication is Jerome, who we know wasn't present in Rome until Damasus' papacy. So he must have been there, and this must have happened during this time period. It might have happened in the very last couple years of Liberius, but that seems very unlikely. So, especially since the rest of our speculation here has nothing to do with Lucifer having no reason to be a friend to Damasus, especially because Damasus had been a supporter of Antipope Felix directly against Liberius. And we see that Lucifer and his followers, who are unfortunately called Luciferians, absolutely do not support Damasus, and they write a treatise condemning him. It's called the Libellus Precum ad Imperators Adversus Damascum. We discussed this briefly in Damasus' episode. But in this document, there are further accounts of attacks on Lucifer and his supporters that sound awfully familiar to what we see happening to Ursinus and his followers. So McIntyre and another historian, Neil McLinn, make an argument that it seems like the Luciferians picked up where the Ursinians had been driven off in challenging Damasus.
That's how you get murdered.
It is how you get murdered, and this is what they're seeing, that the Luciferians are kind of being attacked the way the Ursinians are. So it's very possible that the two groups were in affinity with one another or cooperating. We've seen that the Ursinians have not been willing to yield at any point from appealing for their man and condemning Damasus. So it's not that big of a stretch to think that maybe these two marginalized groups with the same adversary might cooperate or come together, especially when one group has a noticed rival to the Pope. So maybe the Ursinians and the Luciferians were buddies. It's purely speculative. There are arguments to be made for both sides, but it's a fun thought. But let's get back to what we actually know as fact in terms of what happened after the thorough exiling of Ursinus. When Emperor Valentinian died in 375, Ursinus and his followers attempted to come back to Rome to claim papal authority once again, but they were repelled by the urban prefects and their banishment was maintained. In 378, Ursinus was condemned in a synod in Rome of 44 bishops, and Damasus was legitimately declared pope. In 381, another council was held, and this was the council where Damasus was facing charges of corrupting women and murdering people, but here he was exonerated and his accusers were condemned, and since his accusers were thought to be Ursinus making an appeal attempt, we see that kind of firing back up. And finally, when Damasus dies in 384, Ursinus is still alive, and there are some stirrings among his supporters in terms of plans to return to Rome and claim the papacy, or maybe to oppose the next candidate, which would be Siricius. But the urban prefect, this time called Pinianus, he held the attempt at bay again. And he actually received a bunch of letters of commendation and congratulation from Siricius when Siricius was successfully elected without any kerfuffle or Ursinian influence. And that is unfortunately the last that we hear in the sources about Ursinus.
Oh no.
He died sometime after 384 because he certainly outlived Damasus. But other than that, we have no idea how long it was. So that's him. We can rate him.
Oh my god, okay.
It's a bit of a trip. This was an interesting one to research. He's definitely more compelling than most, so.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, he had to deal with Murder Pope.
Yeah, the worst Murder Pope, yes.
Anyone who has to deal with Murder Pope is going to be semi-interesting.
Exactly. Unless they get murdered right away, because then less interesting. But he didn't.
What a short anti-pope episode that would be.
There will be some that come like that, so.
Popum justificum.
Justifications for the schism. Did he have a good reason? Well, this comes down to a question of loyalty to the previous papacy. Ursinus and the common people were loyal to Liberius, and in the end, Liberius did prevail, so.
What did Liberius score? He was pretty good, right?
As a pope, for Papatum Infallium, we scored Liberius an 8.
That's not bad.
Not bad. So we have this man who was very, very loyal to him and represented the majority of the laity in Rome. And then we have Damasus, who is about personal ambition and wealth of the higher-ups. But this is also a question about the hierarchy of the church. So we have to ask ourselves when we answer this question, should we favor somebody who represents the people or just the elite? Do we look at someone who represents the church or the civil authority? And he had a better lifestyle. He represented a more humble church and definitely had less scandal than Damasus. To me, I think he's got some good reasons.
He does. Like, okay, we scored Liberius pretty good. Damasus is just, he's basically only pope because he ran in and murdered people. Yeah. It's like, was this like the best of situations? Ursinus would have been pope instead.
Yeah, I just think he would have made an entirely different pope. And I understand why the people wanted to support him over Damasus. So I think he has good reason. And no one in this category has scored well so far. So I want to give him a good mark. I'm going to give him like a 7, I think.
Okay. I kind of want to give him an 8.
So for Papatum Justificum, he gets a 15.
Ecclesius Impetus.
What impact does he actually have on the church? Does he weaken the church? Does he strengthen them? I mean, he definitely has an impact on the church. Later churches, there are actual rules that will go into place because of how his anti-papacy went down. There's a decree in 502 under Pope Symmachus that ruled that laymen should no longer vote for the popes and that only higher clergy should be considered eligible. Ursinus had been a deacon. Damasus had been an archdeacon. So they're trying to limit who is actually eligible to be pope and also trying to keep the popular vote of the actual people of the church out of it because they saw what happened when Ursinus had both. Also, when Damasus faced charges brought by Ursinians in the Council of 381, Emperor Gratian stepped in and urged the prefect of Rome to disregard the charges and expel the accusers. So this sets up a precedent for Pope to have immunity and special privileges over civil court charges against them. So that's not a good impact, but we see that happening because of what Ursinus is doing. So I think he definitely should get some points for kind of stumbling up the papacy from just letting Damasus run away with it. It's not a lot, but he needs a couple of points. I'm going to give him like a 3.
If you're going to give him a 3, I'm going to give him a 1.
Okay, that's fair. I'm mostly giving him points because there had to be a decree after him. So obviously they were scared of what someone like him could do.
Facium scleratus.
There are no contemporary depictions of just him. And I'm sure that part of this is because the overwhelming influence of Damasus had suppressed any support of Ursinus. But we do have one image that I'm going to show. We're not going to give him any points in this category because there's no photo directly of him. But we do have a painting by Jan Lucan, who did it's basically a portrait of the moment of the massacre.
Okay, let's look at it.
Jan Lucan is a Dutch painter.
Okay, here we go. All right, where is he?
There's not one person you can identify as either Damasus or Ursinus definitively, but there are definitely two people standing up over on the one side, and there's one kind of guy in the
back there.
Yeah, so maybe, but this is more about people just absolutely getting murdered, so it's not worth any points, but it's worth a look because this is not something we have.
This radiates a lot of the same energy as that picture of Justin Bieber being choked.
What?
Have you seen that photo?
No. Who the hell is choking Justin Bieber and why is this a thing?
I don't know, man.
I feel like that's someone's fetish.
Probably.
Oh, what a strange photo. I don't understand.
Doesn't have a lot of the same energy, though.
Yeah, it does. That is a thing. I don't even know how to respond to that. But yes, that is the same energy for sure. Wow.
There's a lot of people looking and being like, what's happening over there?
Totally. And it's just so, like, I don't know. Which one's more bizarre? Definitely the Justin Bieber picture, but good gracious. Wow. I have to just end it on that note because, wow, I don't even know.
Tempus non pontificus.
Time as antipope. A few months at most. So more likely only a few days because the violence. But he does outlive Damasus. This is good. We're going to credit him for a quarter of a year since, though it's likely that he only was declared pope for that very short time before the violence and the expulsion, he still pushed for his cause long after he was exiled. And he had to be exiled twice. So we're going to give him credit for a quarter of a year. A 0.0625.
Hey, so it's canon bonus round time. No fanfare.
Is he a saint? Not even a little bit.
Oh, poor bear.
Yeah, not even a little bit. So, his total score is impressive. He scored a total of 19.0625.
That's way better than any of our other anti-popes.
Well, except for he didn't do as well as Hippolytus, but Hippolytus got a lot more score for actually impeding the church and being the first anti-pope in history, so. But it's pretty good. He's only, like, 2 points behind him.
And he didn't have a face.
He didn't have a face. So if he had had a face, he would have won.
You know he would have.
Now we need to ask our final question. Pope or no? There's actually a discussion to be had here.
Finally a discussion.
Yeah. Even though Damasus was a massively influential pope and is currently our top scorer, it does not mean that he was a good man.
No, so we have to go with, it's either moral, it's a moral debate now. Do we go the moral high ground or do we stick with Damasus, who is the worst?
Right? Like, I mean, is it possible that Ursinus could have been the massive powerhouse that Damasus was with, like, papal primacy and the canon of the Bible and the Vulgate? Probably not, but he might have been a less violent man and he might have been a lot more, like, steadfast. And really, this is a subjective category. So, I mean, we can rate this any way we want. And I have no problem whatsoever saying I like him so much more than Damasus.
I do like him a lot more than Damasus. I don't know if he would have had the same sort of impact Damasus did, but screw that guy.
Yeah. So you want to give it to him?
Yeah.
Awesome. So he is our first pope in this category. We will end very quickly with I just want to give you an idea of who the historical sources think are at fault for this event. Who do they blame? Do they blame Damasus or do they blame Ursinus?
Who do they blame?
So Ammianus Marcellinus, the source we used for most of this, blamed both men and their ambition. And this is really interesting because he was also a pagan. So a lot of people consider him to be the least biased and most accurate source. The author of the Gesta blames Damasus 100% of the way. Socrates Scholasticus and Zosimus fully blame Ursinus. And Jerome also fully blames Ursinus, but duh.
I feel like the people blaming Ursinus, this is a lot like a traffic accident where you clearly, like, the other person was speeding. And, like, you didn't have the right-of-way, but you were already partway pulled out before they came around the corner and hit you because they were speeding. So, like, you wouldn't have been able to see them anyway. And then you're blamed for it because of right-of-way rules.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I mean, it just seems like it's a principle thing, and none of them really have that much ground to stand on. So, yeah, I think that works. And we've decided he's better than Damasus. He may not have been as good of a scorer, but that's fair. And I'm gonna get that dog.
Well, I mean, Rowan also started making little yips, so I think it's yip time for everybody.
It is yip time. So on that note, and with lots of dog and child noises in the background, we can say thank you and goodbye.
Bye.